Illinois has both massive pension debt and a long-running, ever-widening structural budget deficit. The governor campaigned hard on what he thought his solution was, a graduated income tax, but of course voters rejected that. Do you believe, though, that Illinois can cut its way out of our fiscal problems? Or are there any revenues, say expanding sales taxes to include services like many other states do, that you'd be willing to discuss after the economy stabilizes post-pandemic?
Well, the number one thing that we need to do is make Illinois a state where people are actually moving into the state again, right? We're the only state in the Midwest that has significant net out migration. The biggest thing that we can do to stabilize our state's finances is to get working people moving into the state again. There's a number of things that fit into that problem. You know, when I talk to people who tell me that they're leaving the state, a big driver of that is property taxes. And the legislature has failed in the last several years to put forward reasonable reforms to help get our property taxes under control. And this is part of this. This affects not just individual families. I mean, it's a significant issue with individual families. I mean, your property tax bill is likely to be three times what it'll be moving to another state. Go to Indiana, your similar value house is going to have maybe a third, maybe even less in property tax value. And the big problem with property taxes is how regressive they are. And what I mean by that is, if you invent a new app for your smartphone this year and you make $1 million, you know, you're going to pay, let's say, $10,000 in property tax. You know, if you lose your job and make nothing, you pay $10,000 in property tax. You know, the fact that we're so heavily reliant upon property taxes is really problematic for families, because it's just there, regardless of how much money they make. It's particularly problematic for business, especially small businesses or new businesses or businesses that are struggling, right? Because you're not paying taxes based upon your profits or how much money is going through your business. You are basing it on the number of square feet that you have. I've talked to, you know, manufacturers who are going to Indiana to set up shop. For a number of reasons, but not, you know, chief amongst those tends to be property taxes, because especially if you need a large footprint in order to have, you need to have machines and so forth like that, and you're paying on a square foot basis, you are paying that property tax bill regardless of whether or not you're making any money. And as business owners know, often it takes sometimes several years of investment before you finally begin to turn a profit. That's why we need to fundamentally shift away from property tax, get real, long-term, fundamental property tax reform in place that I think is going to help in lots of other areas to get economic growth going again. And when you do that, then you're going to end up, I think, becoming that net migrator, that net attractor of people to the state, which is fundamentally necessary for getting our state's finances in general under control.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because Cook County Assessor Fritz Kagi, he has this bill that he's been pushing since even before he was sworn into office, this so-called data modernization bill that businesses, the assessor's office, could ask for basic information like the income and costs. You know, that would be then baked into the property tax calculation. His bill would make it automatic for Cook County, and then the other 101 counties could opt in. He says it would, you know, stabilize that process. Do you support that idea? Do you support that bill? Or do you think that, you know, there are some that say it goes too far in asking things of businesses?
So I do think that there is merit to the idea. I think there's some specifics that we'll obviously need to work out and everybody at the table at. But I think part of the driver that is kind of creating the unfortunate situation that we're in now is just how many properties in Cook County, often in the city of Chicago, that pay a fraction of what they are supposed to be paying in property taxes because they happen to hire the right property tax firm. Fundamentally, at the end of the day, I think we need to move away from property taxes as the primary form of taxation of our school districts and things in general, municipalities and so forth, and get it over to another system. It's going to be very, very hard to do, right? I mean, most states who have tried to do this, it's been hard to do it without just like hard caps that they put in place and then, you know, leaving the door open for then, you know, there'd be a municipality or school district to go elsewhere in order to get money. You're going to make people mad and upset when you kind of upset the apple cart in that way. but it's the kind of fundamental change that's necessary. I think that his proposal is trying to work within the current system, when I think we'd probably need to blow up the current system and get something else fundamentally redone.
Well, lots of folks on the Democratic side agree with you that property taxes are regressive, and their solution then is, well, then we have to equalize, and we would raise the income tax and then distribute it to municipalities, school districts, et cetera, more fairly.
So, I mean, this is something we need to sit down and work out, and it's not easy to do. I mean, New Jersey tried to do something along this line. Part of the failure in New Jersey was the fact that they didn't provide the appropriate curbs when they did restructure the system to prevent property taxes from going back up again over time. And so it actually didn't have fundamental change in the system. And I think one of the other issues that really plays into all of this is the issue of trust. I think that's a big reason as to why the graduated income tax did not pass this last year. I think that the public just fundamentally does not trust Springfield in general. And as a result of that lack of trust, coming up with a big idea of, like, let's blow up the system and, like, restructure it, I think is going to have a hard sell just because of those longstanding kind of issues of corruption and self-dealing that have happened in this building, have happened in this town. And I think that, that's probably the necessary precursor to get to the point in which we need to have developed that faith and trust in the public so that we can get to the point in which the big ideas, right, that we need to embrace can actually get traction with the public. There's no silver bullet, and it's not an overnight process.
In 2013, which was a couple of years before you came to Springfield, the General Assembly passed a very contentious pension overhaul law that organized labor fought tooth and nail and eventually successfully got it overturned in the state Supreme Court when the justices unanimously said that the pension protection clause in the state's constitution is pretty ironclad. But like I said, you weren't around for that 2012-2013 pension fight, but do you agree with your counterpart, Leader Durkin, that lawmakers should give it another go with then Senate President John Cullerton's so-called consideration model, wherein labor would negotiate what kinds of cuts they might be willing to see? Or are you more of the mind that a constitutional amendment to revise the pension protection clause, however unrealistic that might be in the current political dynamic that we're living in, is the only way?
So I was driving down to Springfield here recently, and I stopped and I saw a friend on the way down. My wife is Bulgarian, and so Bulgarians are very much like Greeks, and they love their feta cheese. And my friend loves feta cheese but can't get it where he is, so I brought him some, and we're in the driveway chatting, and his wife came out to talk, and she was a retired teacher. And, she was commenting on the fact that she said, you know what, I get 3% annual compounded cost of living adjustment. And she said, I don't want the COLA. She said, I don't need it, first of all, but what I would rather have is the security of knowing that the pension system is going to be able to be there long term. She said, because I don't have that assurance right now. I do think that we need to have reforms that actually get our pension systems onto the track, that they can fulfill the promises that were made to the people who essentially have put all their eggs in that basket, right? These people do not qualify for Social Security. Many of them, instead of maybe putting money away for retirement, they were paying into the pension system instead, right? Many of them are public servants, teachers sometimes who weren't making a lot of salary, your first responders who have chosen to give back to society and have counted on this pension. We need to do what we can to guarantee them that their pension will be there long term. And I frankly, unfortunately, agree with the teacher that isn't there right now. So I do think that we should get to a position to where we have some sort of kind of negotiated settlement, which has happened in other states, that ends up in the position that long-term makes sure that these pension promises will actually be there for people no matter what kind of happens. I mean, look, we're on an unsustainable path going forward. We should stabilize the pension system, not just for the retirees that are there now, not just for the current employees, but also for the image of the state in a whole so that we can have people who, when they are looking into reasons why they might move to Illinois and are saying, but I don't really like the weather there, you know, we're stacking things on the other side, right? We have a very highly educated workforce. We have great transportation systems. Multiple Fortune 500 companies that are based here. Great opportunities, but it's the instability that we've had in Springfield that's been, I think, highlighted by our out-of-control pension system. If we could get that under control, I think that the reputation of the state would greatly improve. And you know, those people who may have anecdotally heard things, bad things about Illinois, start hearing good things, start looking at making their home here again.
So then you would be in favor of going back to the table and trying the consideration model?
Certainly. I mean, I think we need to do that. This is what has had to do in other states. And I don't think anybody in an honest moment will sit here and say that we don't have to do anything with our pension system at this point in time.
We are now in the midst of a session where massive energy legislation is on the horizon, which would include stronger mandates on clean energy and possibly totally overhauling how Illinois gets its energy. You, of course, I should mention, are an energy consultant. Retailers and manufacturers use an extraordinary amount of energy, and their impact on the environment is among the biggest footprints. But lots of businesses also want to be part of the solution as climate change becomes more and more urgent. They would also bear, you know, some of the biggest costs, no matter how Illinois goes with changing energy portfolio standards. So how do you balance the need for cleaner energy with the increased cost on both consumers and businesses?
So it's a very good question, and it's a difficult one. And this is why I voted against the energy bill three years ago now. That was a situation at the time where Exelon was threatening at that point to shut down two nuclear plants. They essentially had a gun to the head of the state and, you know, demanding extra, you know, money out of the state. And here we are just a few short years later. Now it's two different nuclear plants, same type of situation. And we have a whole bunch of different entities at the table, as you've mentioned, you know, looking for kind of their piece of the pie. I think that what we need to do here, whatever we do, it has to have long-term stability that's built into it. It needs to be a long-term solution. What was passed a few years ago was not long-term. Obviously, from Exelon being back, all the solar credits being spent at a much faster rate than it should have been, and with a much lower rate of return or lower megawatts being put forward than what was expected, I think about around 10% or maybe even less of the number of megawatts that they were supposed to be creating actually having been created. So we got to be a lot smarter about this time, and we need to do it that on a longer term scale, right? So that when what we're doing, we provide that level of stability. I think I talked with someone the other day who has clients who was in Texas, and obviously the Texas situation that happened in which they had, you know, natural gas freeze in the lines and such that caused massive spikes. I mean, he told me about one company whose normal monthly bill for electricity was $3 million a month, and that month it was $60 million. That's untenable as well, right? We've had very low rates in the state, but very steady rates. And that is my goal in any sort of legislation we have for it. Obviously, the price that you're paying needs to be as low as is reasonable for a good, well-functioning system. That system needs to be really firmed up and established, though, to make sure we don't have similar types of situations like what happens in Texas. But it needs to also be long-term as well so that we don't run the every 3 years or something like this, we have energy companies coming back and saying, we're sorry, but you know, we need to kind of adjust this again. That, I just think, is untenable.
Most folks who are at the table negotiating the energy bill, they share a goal of having 100% renewable energy by 2050. Is that a realistic goal?
I'm not an expert in kind of... I do think that we could get there by 2050. The question is whether or not we could actually do it with the technology we have now. I don't think so with the technology we have now. However, things like the efficacy of solar panels and, you know, the increasing miniaturization of kind of nuclear power that may be able, I mean, there is technology that may be on the horizon within the next 10 or 20 years. You have, you know, something the size of this desk that's able to run a city of 10,000 people, and, you know, it's safe, clean energy with no emissions. These are the types of things that I think are coming. So I do think that in the next 30 years, getting to a goal like that will be possible. We just need to make sure that we have the appropriate flexibility, that we're recognizing and able to bring on board the new technologies and utilize them in the most effective, efficient way possible when they come to fruition.
We are more than a year into this pandemic recession, and one of the things that Governor Pritzker touts is this big grant program, the Business Interruption Grant Program. $290 million went to about 9,000 small businesses throughout the state, around $30,000 each. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's federal pass-through money that the state, you know, just set up a program to distribute. So what can the state actually say that the state's done for businesses in the last 14, 15 months?
Nothing good. I mean, very little in this regard. I mean, I'm sure that the governor will tout the healthcare response and, you know, what, how, you know, getting vaccines in arms and things like this is ultimately being good for businesses and good for the economy. But unfortunately, I mean, the manner in which he operated early on set the stage for so many difficulties and problems, so many people having lost their jobs, more than necessary, businesses closing that wasn't necessary. I mean, look, I wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal last April, so, you know, 6 weeks into the crisis, in which I talked about the fact you could go to Target and buy clothes, you could go to Walmart and buy furniture, you could go to the grocery store and buy flowers, but I couldn't go to a clothing store, a furniture store, or a flower shop. All small businesses, even if they were able to operate with the same safety protocols and mechanisms that the big box stores had, that had a huge, devastating impact on small businesses and small retailers, and by extension, whole communities and so forth, because of just, you know, I mean, I've heard numbers of approximately a third of businesses now being out of business now because not just of COVID, but because of the severity of those lockdowns. And that is exactly the reason why the governor should not bear the burden of management alone in regards to this, but actually work with the legislature, who is so much closer to the people and the problems in our communities.